The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back to the second hour. The program is live, and it's always great to welcome Andrea Adelson from ESPN back to our program. So many different ways to twist the NIL story. Andrea, thank you for being here. It's great to have you. How are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm great. Thanks for having me back on.
We are looking forward to it. And really, for the last week, it's been NIL all the time. I know you've looked into a couple of players in Florida and elsewhere. What are you learning as we are trying to figure this thing out?
Well, Paul, it is a brave new world out there. And honestly, my biggest takeaway is that we still don't know a whole lot about what this is going to look like in the weeks and months ahead. Sure, we know that there are athletes, both men and women, who have already cut some deals, and whether that is with appearances or with local businesses or with big companies, in the case of the Cavender twins, who were basketball players out in California, those have been drawing the headlines. Now the bigger question is, okay, how much more money is going to be out there? We don't really know the total dollar figures here. We don't know what the time commitment is going to look like in season. A lot of these players who have already gotten deals have told me, look, it's great now, but once the football season starts, I'm going to be committed 100% to football. We don't know how many other local businesses and what we've already seen bits and pieces of are going to get involved in this. We also don't know what the booster involvement is going to be. We've seen some stories come out from Miami about a booster who wants to get involved and try to bring back the U and pay Miami players to sponsor his gyms. That's one small piece of it, Paul. So I think over this last week, we've seen the potential for what can be done for collegiate athletes, but I think we're just scraping the surface at this point.
And I ask everybody that talks about this the following question, and I don't think anyone really knows. I'm just assuming that maybe you have a better perspective, but how are the schools going to manage this once it starts happening? I mean, it is happening.
It is happening. So essentially, schools are tied into platforms where it's up to the student athlete to be able to upload documentation that shows what they're going to get paid for. This is an absolute requirement, right? Every athlete who gets a deal, no matter how big or how small, has to put in that paperwork through their school. Now, the schools are going to have to look it over to make sure it is compliant with the very basic rules that are out there. And Paul, let me just reiterate this. These are very basic rules and guidelines that have been set out by the NCAA and also by the various states that do have some state legislation. And we know that there cannot be arrangements made by coaches or universities to allow their players to be able to make money. We know that people aren't allowed to just openly hand out bags of money to recruits in order to entice them to come to school. Those are some of the very basic frameworks that are in there. The compliance guidelines are still in there. But in terms of looking over these contracts, really compliance just needs to have a copy of what these players are going to be doing, what kind of deals they're going to be getting. I know in the state of Florida, this is required and mandated. But really, there's not much that can be done beyond monitoring what their athletes are doing and making sure that they're in compliance with the NCAA rules. And I think that's why we've heard this described as a, quote, wild, wild west scenario, because a lot of these schools have no idea what it's going to look like in reality and in practice as we move further into this about policing to make sure that they are compliant, making sure that the athletes are putting in their paperwork, making sure that athletes are not using the logos and the marks from their universities when they go out and do a lot of these deals. That's another rule that these athletes have to follow. If I was in compliance and I'm an athletic director, I'm hiring somebody or I'm making somebody in charge of NIL in my department to make sure that we are doing what we can to support our athletes but also following the guidelines that are out there in the NCAA in our state.
The other issue that is still not determined, but everyone is discussing it, is really which schools are going to get the advantage here. You're in a pretty rich state down there where I would think it would help. But with so many different players involved, and you know, is this a case, Andrea, where, hate to even say this, but the rich are going to continue to get richer?
I do think that the rich are going to continue to get richer because they will have the ability to offer things to their players that maybe don't exist in other locales. And by they, I mean businesses and others who want to see their programs succeed and will do whatever it takes to be able to sign a player to an endorsement deal. Paul, I've also wondered whether schools in big city markets like Miami or schools in college towns stand to benefit more. If you're in a place like Miami, and we've already seen the story come out of this local business owner who wants to pay every Miami player $500 a month to promote his business, let's just say we don't know how many players are going to take him up on that offer, but he wanted to put it out there for a reason. These are the types of opportunities that are available in a big city like Miami, where a business owner has the potential to pay $540,000 a year to athletes. That's one business in a giant city like Miami. So you start to think about, okay, are there a lot of other businesses with that kind of cash in a city like Miami who can afford to do this? Or in a smaller college town where those players are the only thing that matters, is that more important for the local businesses to spend a lot of money on those players? I don't know the answer to that one yet. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. But I also think we would be naive to believe that programs weren't already trying to take advantage of rules that were already in place. We've already seen way too many stories about violations that have happened to gain an advantage in recruiting. The fact that this is happening right now means that, okay, there's more that's out there, right? Boosters can now get involved to sign players to sponsorship deals. And so I think that schools and that are in places that have the means to be able to make this happen are going to be able to continue to sell this to their players as, hey, you come here and these businesses and these owners, look at what they've already done for our players. They might be able to do something like that for you.
Talking to Andrea Adelson, the guy down in Miami, I believe his name is Dan Lambert. How would that work if you end up paying everyone on the team?
So essentially, his plan is to pay $500 a month to each player on the team to do promotions and endorsements of his gym. And he's got a bunch of gyms in that area. It's called American Top Team, home to a bunch of MMA fighters. So this is a well-known gym in Miami. And so you're going to pay a player $500, and that player is going to be required to do X amount of promotions, whether it's on social media and whatever else, to be able to earn that money, right? You're getting paid something, so you got to do something for the business in return. But I think the more interesting part of the story, which my colleague Dan Murphy wrote and has up on ESPN.com right now, is that he started a corporation that's called Bring Back the U, that's essentially focused on trying to pay Miami football players so that they will want to come to Miami and then stay at Miami so they can start improving Miami, right? Paul, we keep asking, when's Miami going to be back? Well, that's why this is what the corporation is called. And so his point is he wants to try and rally local businesses in the area to hire players as spokespeople. He wants to host fundraising events where all the money that's raised there will go to players as spokesmen for whatever businesses are interested in using them. So this, by the way, is legal. We talk about gray areas and potential loopholes. He's talked to Miami compliance. He's hired an attorney. And there's nothing in the state law that says that a booster cannot go out and form a corporation in order to be able to help support current student athletes. And so that's one way, potentially, that maybe other boosters out there are looking at that and saying, wow, it's a pretty good idea. Maybe I should do that for myself. So I think there are going to be new, inventive, creative ways that none of us have even thought about or conceived at this point as we move forward here in the NIL era.
Andrew, I'm just talking to myself here, but you know, we're talking about $540,000 here, and if other fat cats do this, I wonder if they're going to look at this as their major contribution to the school, and the school's athletic department, the school's general fund, however they do it, are going to get less money in the future.
Great question, Paul, and it's certainly one that I have talked to coaches and administrators about, because this is a lot of money that we're talking about, and it's an opportunity for these players to be able to get a cut of it. But if you're a booster, right, and you say to yourself, okay, I am going to spend X number of dollars in this one calendar year to support my university or my student athletes, what is going to be the best return on my investment? Is it going to be a contribution to the athletic department? Or is it going to be endorsing players who could potentially now be bringing in business to my business, right? Let's say this $540,000 that they spend, let's say every player takes it, and let's say they spend the full $540,000, leads to another 2,000 new members to their gyms across South Florida because they've seen these Miami players endorsing and talking about the gym. Well, think about how much more money that business owner has made. Whereas if he were just to write a check to the Miami Athletic Department and get, unless he's getting his name on a building there or in a room there, what's the return on investment? This might be a better return on investment to a business owner if they can drum up more business for themselves by using players to endorse the business. So I think it's a great question. It's one we're going to have to continue to monitor, because I do think there is the potential for some of the dollars that are going to schools right now to end up in the pockets of players.
Andrew, before you go, we're getting ready for an avalanche of media days. I mean, everybody in the next 2 weeks. It feels like by the time we get to July, we've already hashed all this stuff out. But as a reporter who covers this sport, what are you most interested in over these next 2 weeks?
Well, I will be in Charlotte for ACC kickoff, and I know folks at my company will be at every single media day event. We're looking forward to that. From my perspective, quite honestly, Paul, I'm most interested beyond, okay, I think we all know who the top four or six teams are going to be this year. I want to talk to players about how they feel about NIL and the playoff expansion, right? Because these two ginormous stories, which are going to shape college football now for the next decade, have happened in the middle of the summer where we haven't really had access to players. So I would love to hear their thoughts on it. We've heard from coaches, we've heard from administrators. And so when I get to Charlotte, you bet I will be asking these players how they feel about not only NIL, which we've just talked about at length here, but about the playoff and how they feel about the potential for playing 17 games. And if this is something that they wanted, if they were consulted about it, if they feel like they should have been consulted about it, how do they feel about what the setup is going to be? What would they like the setup to be? Because I do feel that the players should have a voice here, especially because we're going to be expanding it out to more games that these players are going to be playing beyond just whatever Dabo is going to say about Clemson or Nick Saban's going to say about Alabama. For me, I really want to hear from the players during media day.
And I realize you're attending to cover it. You're not in charge of it. But I've already heard that the media days, while thankfully they're going to go off, are going to be a little smaller. I don't know if you've heard much on that. And the one in Charlotte's a little bit different than the soiree that I normally attend. How different are they going to be this year, if you know from years past?
Well, I can tell you, Paul, I've talked to several folks in the ACC, and they're still trying to determine what the format is going to look like, because I'll just tell you what it is in Charlotte. They have the coach and a couple of players who are at a press conference setting, very similar to what happens with the SEC, and then they have these smaller breakout rooms where you have an opportunity to maybe get a coach or a player aside one-on-one. And of course you got Radio Row, which every single media day has. I know Radio Row is going to be smaller because you just can't have that many people squeezed into a tight space going table to table the way that we used to. But in terms of what the format is going to be, how many people are going to be in that giant press conference room, what are the breakout sessions going to look like, what's going to happen with masks and distancing, because they're not asking people whether they're vaccinated or not, and rightfully so, that's a choice. I don't know yet what it's going to look like in Charlotte, but I certainly anticipate that it's not going to be 1,000 people in a room the way that we're used to in, quote, normal years.
Yeah, I mean, not to get too deep into the weeds here, but I've already heard from friends of mine in the media, and we are now, 12 days away from the start of one of the media days. And there are the people that normally show up, they still haven't heard whether they've been credentialed. That's how tight it could be in a lot of places, which, again, doesn't affect the fans watching and listening, but it does affect what it looks like. Well, good luck. We will talk to you soon, and we'll be crossing paths as you're heading to ACC Media Days. Andrea, always great to have you on.
All right. Thanks for having me again, Paul. Appreciate it.
You bet it. Great stuff with Andrea. We'll take a break. A lot more guests. We'll head to Oklahoma a little bit later as we crisscross the country. We'll also include your phone calls.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We welcome you back as we continue here. Let's get some more phone calls in here. If you want to get in, we will take your calls right now at 855-242-7285. Let's check in with Tyler, who is on the air. Hello, Tyler.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
My point is, you know, all this talk about NIL needing to be fair, I don't know that it applies, because we're talking about money and we're kind of talking about the real world. And the real world's not fair, and so maybe it's a good preparation for the athletes to enter the real world.
Yeah, you know, I tend to agree with you. I've always felt I don't know about everybody else, but I learned probably as much about the real world at the end of college trying to find a job than I did during college. And I think you're right. These men and women are going to learn that it isn't fair. There is a disproportionate amount of money that goes to people for whatever reason. Some of these deals are not going to last, because if I'm a local business owner and I hire the quarterback to do my social media and nobody reacts, well, I'm not going to keep paying them. So, I frankly think it's a good laboratory, and these folks will be ready for the real world, I promise you.
Thanks for talking to me, Paul.
Hey, thank you. Really, really appreciate it. And I think you got to remember, right now, all these deals that you are hearing about, I think most of the companies are in it for them to try to get publicity. I think they care far more about getting their name, image, and likeness out there than they care about the players right now. I mean, this guy in Miami, I mean, I'm having a hard time buying into that. Now, he's already got a lot of publicity out of it. I mean, he's going to spend $540,000, which is a lot of money, but, you know, he's being talked about all over the country because he was the first guy in. The next guy that does that is not going to get as much attention. And I'll say this just like Terrence Moore did. The media, and I'll include us, we're all fawning over these deals because it is new. That won't happen. I mean, in 2 weeks from now, when we're 3 days into media days, interviewing coaches and players and speculating on the season, you know, some guy making a deal is not going to be as big a story because the season will dwarf all of this. Let's try some more calls here. Jack is up next. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Paul Feinbaum. I hadn't talked to you in a good while, I guess since you left Birmingham, but I got a little trivia for you. And sure. If you guess it, next time you're in Mobile, I'll buy you lunch. How's that?
Well, that is exactly what I want. You got a good place for me?
Oh, yeah. We got several good places. Anyway, in the early 70s, I was in the sporting goods business. Well, was a professional fighter. I was in the sporting goods business 16 years. And in the early 70s, we had this guy that played football. I ain't going to say where he played because I'd give it away. But we sold jerseys. We'd order 200 and 300 jerseys, and they wouldn't last 3 days. We'd order another 200, and they wouldn't last 3 days. And I guarantee you, if he was playing today, he'd have made $4 or $5 million off them jerseys. Now, you got to tell me what player it was and what his number was. Early 70s, 71.
71 would be...
You want me to give you his number?
Yeah, number 7, would that be right?
No, number 22.
Number 22?
Yeah. The number was 22, and I guarantee you he sold $3 million worth of jerseys.
Is that Johnny Musso?
That's it. You got it, number 22.
I couldn't remember his jersey, but I would have now... I jokingly said this to Johnny once. I said, that would be, if you made a couple of million dollars, that's more money than you got to go to Alabama?
But
Johnny Musso, Italian Stallion, was one of the most, you're right, he was one of the most popular players to ever go to Alabama.
Yeah, we get 300 jerseys in, they wouldn't last 3 days.
Now, that was the era of Pat Sullivan, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was. They beat Auburn that year. But
yeah, Pat told me once, I mean, he and Johnny, I think, were friends in high school. And
yeah.
Pat went to John Carroll. Where'd Johnny go? I can't remember.
Not Bessemer. It was,
He grew up in Birmingham. I mean, that was I mean, those were two of the story goes, I think this is the right story, that Coach Jordan was trying to recruit him to Auburn, and his car broke, and it was something about Legion Field, and his car broke down, and he was supposed to meet Pat at a game, Johnny at a game, and the next thing you know, I'll tell you what it was. I think he was with Johnny Musso, and the car broke down, and the next thing you know, here comes Bear Bryant in a black limo. And he picks up Johnny, and that's how Coach Jordan. I may have the story wrong, but I vaguely remember that story.
Well, same thing happened with Richard Todd. Todd was at his house waiting on Auburn to come to his house, and Bryant beat him to it, and he got in the car with Bryant and left. He ended up signing with Auburn.
My favorite story, and I don't know if you know John Mitchell, who's from Mobile.
Oh yeah, well see, John is a good friend of mine.
Okay, well, you know this story, but John used to be a neighbor of mine back in Birmingham, and he told me the story once about, I think this is right, that John McKay saw John Mitchell, he was at a junior college in Arizona, and he called Coach Bryant and said, what do you know about this guy? And I mean, they had totally missed on him. I mean, I don't know why. So long story short, Coach Brian hangs up. He said, John, let me check on that for you, okay? And he called a judge down in Mobile. The judge said, oh, yeah, I know who he is.
Judge McRae. He called McRae.
Okay.
Judge
McRae. And by the end of the night, Coach Brian had a plane down there picking up John Mitchell, and John McCain never came close to him.
Well, I used to work with Big John's brother. He worked with me. I was a resource officer, you know, before I got elected sheriff. And I worked with Big John's brother, Mitch, at the school board. But Big John was a good guy. But anyway,
did you say you were the sheriff?
Yeah, 12 years.
Wow.
I was also the number two welterweight in the world.
Were you really?
Yeah. Yeah. You used to write for the paper, and I was a big fan of yours. And
yeah,
and,
I used to do something constructive.
Well, you did.
By the way, I think Johnny Musso went to Banks High School.
Banks, I see it. It was Banks. Well, I owe you a steak when you're in town. I don't know when you come in, but.
Well, I haven't been to Mobile in a while, but hey, Jack, I can't thank you enough. I would love to sit down and talk to you.
Oh yeah, it'd be great. Thank you so much.
You got it. Yeah, you bet. How about that? Number two welterweight in the world from Mobile, Alabama. We'll take a break. We have a lot to do. We're heading out west to get a little taste of the country as we get ready for the college football season after this.
All right. Nice to talk to you.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
90 minutes into the program on a Wednesday, and we've been all over the place, and we continue our travels throughout America. Barry Trammell with us right now from the Oklahoman. He's one of the most respected sports columnists that cover college athletics, and we welcome him to the program. Barry, it's been a while. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well, Paul. Yeah, glad to be on the backside of the pandemic.
Yeah, it's... I mean, everything you do now is like a, you know, people look at you and go, I haven't seen you in a while. How about like 15 months?
I saw one of you. I had breakfast with one of your colleagues, Royce Young, who covers the NBA for ESPN.
Sure.
I had breakfast with him yesterday. I literally hadn't seen him live in 16 months.
No, it's...
So, and he lives 20 miles from me. So
it is remarkable.
It's strange times. Strange times.
It looks like, you know, we've got media days coming up, which, you know, may not be as crazy as the past, but at least they're here. And it's just amazing when you think about it, Barry. And we talked to you often during last spring and summer about how different the conversation is.
Yeah, and there's a sense that, to me, at least out here, I assume it's this way throughout the SEC and everywhere else, a sense of excitement just that, hey, we might actually have a full season. We might have tailgating. We're going to have all those things we took for granted before last year, and then when we went without them, people realized how much they missed them. So, most of the time people are worried about how many games they're going to win or who's going to be the quarterback, and those things are still prevalent. But it's also a case of, hey, just sort of a celebration that the game might possibly be returning to normal.
You know, I know that came up a couple of weeks ago, and I was reading one of your pieces about the Nebraska game. Everybody was so excited about it, and then television put it just in time for breakfast, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, the 11 a.m. kickoff is not very popular in this part of the country. I assume it's not very popular in your part of the country. I don't know. Where it is popular, the Big 12 and the Big 10 sort of have an extra load of that because of their contract with Fox. Fox loves the early kickoff. It's their chance to, you know, they think to get a jump on ESPN. Heck, I'm not arguing with them. They know more about it than I do. But they put a preponderance of their best games at 11 a.m. So the Sooners and the Buckeyes and Texas and Michigan, all kinds of teams, get stuck with 11 a.m. And it was, and for Oklahoma and Nebraska, it was disappointing because they had so many things planned and still do, but celebration of the 50-year anniversary of the game of the century, a lot of players coming back, a lot of special events planned throughout the day. It's hard to cram them in before an 11 a.m. kickoff. So, you know, that was a disappointment, but you could see it coming. When you knew that Fox had the Oklahoma-Nebraska game, you know, that's what they were going to do with it.
Well, Barry, I don't have much of a sample. I've been to Stillwater in November and dealt with an ice storm for, I think, a Baylor game there. And I've been to Oklahoma. I've been to Norman in early September, probably the same weekend as this, for the Alabama game a number of years ago. It was a 1:30 start or 2:30 start. And to this day, I've never been to a hotter game in my entire life. So that was at 2:30. I can't imagine what 11 o'clock is like.
Well, it's funny. Just this week, I was having lunch with some friends, and one of them said the 2002 Oklahoma-Alabama game is the hottest game they ever remember.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yeah, now, I actually think there was a UTEP game. I covered OU-UTEP and the Cowboys-Eagles on back-to-back days. I think it was 2000, and it was 106 in Norman and then 107 in Irving. So I think that was actually hotter, but it was hot that day. In this part of the country, though, you got the worst of it because the hottest part of the day in August, September is usually 5, 4, 5, 6 o'clock,
okay.
Even hotter than like noon. So maybe we'll get a break for that, but it probably will be a scorcher. They like to play night games whenever they can in September, but TV just doesn't allow it.
It was even hotter to watch, my memory is, I think it was Dennis Franchione choke a sure victory at the end of the game. And by the way, that was a good experience Dennis Franchione had with Oklahoma. Apparently, when he left Alabama, it got worse at A&M.
Yeah, you know, OU came back and Bama led 27-24 late, and OU ran two shovel passes to go the length of the field to take the lead and then scored a defensive touchdown at the buzzer to win by 10. But the next year, Fran went to the Aggies, and OU beat them 77-0, which was not a great experience.
I can tell you this. In the history of Alabama football, there have never been more Alabama fans cheering for OU that day.
Well, I can share you a story. I don't think I've said this on your show, but my brother tells me, the story of he got gas that morning in Norman fairly early, and some guy drove in a pickup truck with Alabama tags, and they sort of struck up conversation. My brother's, you know, started talking to him, and the guy says, yeah, I drove all night from Alabama. And, you know, my brother got a funny look on his face and said, yeah, but this is OU's playing Texas A&M. He said, I'd drive across the country to see Dennis Franchione get his butt whipped.
I mean, when he left there, as you well know, when that score came in, I can't remember what stadium I was at, but I mean, the place erupted. I just realized I've bulldozed through the first segment here. Hold on a second, Barry. I want to talk to you about a couple of things that are pretty important. Barry Trumbull with us from the Oklahoman. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We welcome you back. We are talking with Barry Trammell from the Oklahoman. And Barry, thanks for holding on. I want to get to NIL and how it's going down out in Oklahoma in terms of reaction and what it's going to mean.
Yeah, you know, I think a little trepidation by most people or just a little unclear about what the future holds. It's sort of a vast frontier with no great direction. I don't know that anybody really believes it's going to have a profound effect on the competitive balance of college football. I mean, I don't see where this is actually going to hurt Alabama's recruiting. I don't see where it's going to hurt Ohio State's recruiting. So I think it's likely the same teams keep winning. They have for a long time. But what it means in terms of player contentedness, does this mean they'll stay in college longer? I tend to think not. But does this mean they might transfer more? Maybe. I don't know if that's one more thing I guess you can be upset about en route to the portal. Is there some trepidation that, you know, the story out of Miami with the martial arts owner paying all the Miami players, whatever it is, $500 a month to promote his business? Is there, you know, some trepidation that, hey, that could get out of hand and the smaller places, you know, in college football, of which there are quite a few, might be at a disadvantage? I just think it's such an unknown, but I just don't see where it could upset the food chain that we have grown to know so well.
In the remaining moments, let's talk about what's happening on the field. And there's, you know, every day I read another commitment out there, and certainly Spencer Rattler getting a lot of hype for the Heisman. That is not a new thing for OU. What are your thoughts? Is this team capable of not breaking through, because they've been to the Final Four, but is this team good enough to win at all?
Well, I think most reasonable observers would say they're going to have to see it, because the Sooners have been great, consistent winners at getting to the playoff, but they haven't done much when they get there. You know, the Georgia Rose Bowl was a fantastic game; either team could have won. But the other trips to the playoff, they've been handled pretty easily. So, you know, I want to see if this defense, the offense clearly is good enough to do about anything, but the defense was better last season. There's no doubt about that. Is that improvement going to continue? If it does, well, then, you know, maybe the playoff could hold some bonanza for Oklahoma. But until then, you know, I think they need to be shown. Clearly, they're recruiting different kinds of players. You want to say better players? We'll see if it proves to be better. But they appear to be the class of the Big 12, but in the past, that really is as far as it goes. So until they prove it, I'd be a little skeptical.
Well, that was an easy question. Now the obvious question. This is such a an underhanded softball. Texas is back, right?
Well, Texas is back playing football this season, yes. They definitely are. They're going to field a football team. You know, Sarkisian taking over, I think it'll clearly be a sort of an infusion of ideas and an energy and everything else. He comes at a little bit of a bad time because, you know, for about three-quarters of a decade, everyone in this part of the country had a theory, Texas' problem is quarterback. Texas' problem is quarterback. Since Colt McCoy, they haven't had a quarterback. Well, then in 2017, they found a quarterback. Sam Ellinger was a really solid quarterback, and he grew into being a really good quarterback. Maybe not a Heisman-type guy, but clearly a winning quarterback. And guess what? It didn't really change much. So now Ellinger is gone, and they don't have a top-flight quarterback, apparently. I mean, they got a couple of young guys are fighting for the job. One of them is from Oklahoma City. He's the son of former OU quarterback Charles Thompson. So we know him well. But is he the elite quarterback that Texas needs? So I don't know that Sark will have the kind of quarterbacking to which he's accustomed and to which he needs here in year one or year two, and that could impede any kind of quick blast-off for the Longhorns.
Barry, it's always great to have you here. Appreciate your time, and we will look forward to seeing you soon.
You bet, Paul. Thanks.
One of the best. Absolutely. Always a really fun conversation, Barry Trammell from the Oklahoman. We are up against a break. We have time to get to your calls on in a moment, and you can call us now at 855-242-7285.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.